I'm John from Game Life Balance US, a proud member of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the one you're listening to now. The opinions expressed are those of each individual. Check out all the other geeky podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com. And get ready, because geekiness commences in 3, 2, 1.
You are listening to the Starling Tribune, a podcast dedicated to the Arrow TV show.
This guy gets more airtime than the Kardashians, right?
This podcast is not produced or maintained by the CW, Warner Brothers Television, CTV, or DC Comics. All characters, situations, and stories are the properties of Time Warner. I am the Oracle, and this is your Tribune.
Welcome back to the Starling Tribune. I am Stargate Pioneer, because I want to be an asteroid miner. But look, everybody calls me SP. Your reporters for this special summer edition of the Starling Tribune, looking back at episode 11 from season 1 of DC's Legends of Tomorrow, are Chris.
I can't believe it. The Old West.
And joining us again this week is friend of the show and frequent guest host, who might as well just have a key card at this point in time, our very own Michelle.
Tragedy or heartbreak, that's how it always ends.
Oh, it does, doesn't it? And folks, as an added bonus, this week we have a very special guest, the host of two of our DC TV sister podcasts on the Gunna Geek Network, The Crimson Comet and Like a Girl, the one, the only, the girl, Haley!
Is that a challenge? Mick.
I gotta love the scenery he chews. And you know what? I got away from doing a quote myself, but I'm gonna do one tonight. Why can't a gang be a bunch of good guys? All right. We're just a few Gunna Geekers that normally discuss the CW TV show Arrow. This podcast is recorded on Thursday, August 11th, 2016, live on Geeks.live. Just a little reminder that I'm a relative comic newbie. I grew up with sci-fi fan, but have started my comic collecting files, and I'm catching up on the in-depth comic lore thanks to folks like Chris,
who ironically has not been to his local comic book shop in 3 weeks now to pick up his books, so he knows nothing about current stuff.
And Michelle.
Wonder Woman is still great. I'm a little iffy on Harley Quinn and Suicide Squad, but read Wonder Woman. It's real good.
And Haley.
I decided to start at the beginning, the very beginning, and I'm reading everything.
So where are you now?
1972.
With Marvel? Where are you with DC?
Like 1936.
You got a ways to go, my friend.
Good luck. Hey, folks, while we normally cover the CW television show Arrow, during this offseason, we are talking about the CW television show Legends of Tomorrow, as well as the general DC TV news, articles, and announcements that have dropped during the offseason, and undoubtedly will impact future episodes of Arrow when it returns for season 5. Plus, it will definitely contain spoilers for the current episode of Legends of Tomorrow that we're talking about tonight, as well as slight spoilers for the upcoming episodes since they have already aired. So consider yourself warned. We'll try to stay away from major spoilers, but minor ones are going to creep in there just because we can't tell time sometimes, and sometimes we just go forward with the story. It just happens. If you are new to the show, thank you very much for joining us. We really appreciate it. If you like our content, please feel free to drop by our podcast network, Collective, at www.gunnageek.com, where you can find all of our past shows, plus a ton of other similar geeky content.
So if we're a collective, does that make us the Borg?
If so, I'm the queen. Dibs.
Resistance is futile.
Haley, your dictatorship has been challenged.
My authority is absolute.
I'll let you two ladies figure it out. Folks, let's get down to business in the meantime. Michelle, go ahead and run down the details for this episode.
Well, this episode, season 1, episode 11, is called The Magnificent Eight. It originally aired April 14th, 2016, directed by Thor Frudenthal. We've talked about him before, but in the context of Arrow, he has a total of 16 directing credits, but this is the only episode of Legends of Tomorrow he's directed. The story was by a couple of hacks known as Mark Guggenheim and Greg Berlanti.
depending on how you think Arrow went this past season, that might actually be an effective definition.
The Telepray was by Mark Guggenheim. You know, like when you're playing in the DC sandbox, you're not going to leave the story to just anyone. Two showrunners and the big dogs for the DC TV and Berlanti verse. And I mean, really, if you're here, you know who they are. So what were the ratings?
Okay, for this show, the ratings back on April 14th were 1.98. So that's right on the cusp of where you want to be for a DC show, or a CW show. Let's face it, they need a rating of about 2 to make their show. So it's great, but let me tell you, it's the highest rating they're going to get for the rest of the season. So there you go. And in comparison to the other great shows out there, Arrow, which was aired on April 10th, just a couple days before this, Sins of the Father, it got a 2.44, and that episode was where Nyssa disbanded the League of Assassins and Malcolm loses his hand. He was Skywalker'd! Skywalker'd, I say! The Flash was still on a two-week hiatus, so nothing from the Crimson Comet on that. And then Supergirl aired on April 11th with an episode called Myriad over on CBS. And that was when the Myriad effect had taken over National City, and it got a rating of 6.12, which I got to tell you, if you compare it to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., it's still a pretty good rating. So Supergirl was doing pretty well. And like I said, this is the slow slide for the rest of the season for Legends of Tomorrow. Its lowest rating coming up in episode 14 was 1.63, and it finished off at 1.85. It still does have a second season. We'll talk about it later in this episode. So let's start off with the theme, Chris. We have the Magnificent Eight. What a great title. It's what drew Haley in tonight. So what do we got about it?
I didn't get it. What's the theme, guys?
Is that a reference to something?
Is this a reference to something I'm supposed to know?
I grew up in a Western household. I have seen every single John Wayne movie out there. I've seen most of the other.
Did you see the one where he was Genghis Khan?
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
I haven't seen it, but I'm assuming it's super racist.
It took blackface to an entirely new level. But The Magnificent Seven was a great 1960s Western starring Yul Brynner, Steve McQueen, and Charles Bronson.
Steve McQueen.
I know.
He doesn't get a badass car in this like he does in all his other movies, though.
Yul Brynner. Hot.
Is it the bald thing? Is that what's going on?
And he's in all black and just looking good.
There's been multiple remakes for The Magnificent Eight or alternate takes on it. We had a 1998 CBS TV series, which had Michael Bine, I don't know how to say it, Dale Midkiff, and the one and only Hellboy himself, Ron Perlman, a.k.a. Deathstroke the Terminator / Slade from Teen Titans. Look how I tied it all back into our universe.
Ooh, very good. Very adept. Has the transitions going tonight. And in 2016, let's not forget, later this year, I believe in like another month or so, there is an upcoming movie starring Denzel Washington, Chris Pratt, Ethan Hawke, Vincent D'Onofrio, and a bunch of other folks. It's going to be a fun. I actually wasn't going to go see it, but I keep seeing the trailers for it. I'm like, I like the 1960s version. I haven't seen it in a while, but I grew up with it, so I'm going to see this one. Haley, you going to venture out to the movie theater to see this one?
I haven't seen a movie since I moved. So I don't know.
You have not seen Suicide Squad.
Don't do it.
You have not seen Independence Day.
Don't do it.
I kind of wanted to see Ghostbusters, but I haven't.
Do it.
I've heard it's good. I haven't gotten to it yet. I saw Star Trek instead. Star Trek was beautiful.
And we can't forget that all of these are actually remakes of the Kurosawa classic 1954 film called Seven Samurai. So whenever I see this plot, I go, oh, it's the Seven Samurai episode, because this is not the first time that you've seen this on a TV show.
No, not at all. And it was awesome. I think they did a great job. They pulled in a lot of great talent. And the storyline was one of the more intriguing ones of this entire season. So we can't talk about Legends of Tomorrow without talking about fight scene. There was a big fight scene at the end. There was several gun battles throughout the thing. Haley, what's your favorite fight scene of this episode?
It's the Old West saloon barroom fight. It's the only reason I wanted to talk about this episode. In fact, after we talk about it, I'm leaving.
Yes, so am I. Not really.
I said this on Crimson Comet after like the third episode came out, that if this entire series was that just them going back to different time periods and starting bar fights, I would love this show.
Well, they basically did it. I mean, they've been in numerous bar fights at this point in time.
That's the Kronos spinoff series that's coming next, is Mick Rory just goes back in time and starts bar fights everywhere and goes, what are you doing?
No, it's got to be Mick and Snart and Sarah.
Yes.
Exactly. Because I love it how Sarah's the one that's like, come on, let us off the ship. We won't do anything. And
that was entirely predictable.
Captain Hunter knows his people eventually. But let's face it, it was an old-timey saloon, and they had the bar fight with the piano player playing the whole time. How could you not like that?
Of course. He gets paid to play. He doesn't get paid to sit there and watch the fight.
I don't know. I might want to move just in case something comes my way, but...
He's got a job to do.
If you move, you don't get paid.
Well, he definitely should have gotten paid this time because he played through the whole thing. So there was that fight, which was awesome. There was also the fight at the end with the Hunters, which was, you know, your standard Legends of Tomorrow brawl with flying people everywhere, bullets flying everywhere.
I like how they throw it out the window like, oh, don't affect the timeline. Eh, whatever.
Yeah, it will be good.
The Hunter show up. That's how they justify it. Because Rip's like, well, it's all out in the open, so go ahead.
Well, even the Time Masters apparently don't care at all about the integrity of the timeline. Just, you know, whatever. Shoot up the small town in the Old West. It'll be fine.
We'll just come back in and level it later. That's what happened. It was all the Time Masters' fault. It wasn't Rip Hunter's fault. It was Time Masters correcting everything. Well, I guess it was Rip Hunter's fault because he upset the timeline. Time Masters had to come in and get rid of Culver City. Okay, Rip. Not a good one. But that was your old self. This is your new self. So hopefully we will get some more stuff. And then there was some minor fights. The riding through the camp and the horses, that was pretty cool. That wasn't the usual Legends of Tomorrow fight. So, of course, when Ray had to read the Miranda rights, which wouldn't be...
Didn't exist for a long time.
Oh, wait a minute. It's Sheriff John Wayne.
That's true.
Yes. Neil couldn't be here tonight, but if Neil was here, he'd point out the epic fail in Ray's concealed identities.
Hey, he learned it from Marty McFly, okay? Remember, that's Calvin Klein right there.
Don't you mean Clint Eastwood?
Yeah, he's Clint Eastwood as well.
It's better than Dr. Hannibal Lecter. I mean, he improved.
Talking about Back to the Future, the mom of the little boy in this episode, did anybody get a Clara vibe from Back to the Future 3? With that?
Yes.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, total ripoff. Where do you want to start? Do you want to start rating Rip Hunter on his great performance this episode?
I don't want to be first.
He hammed it up so hard at the end there.
So, Haley, what we've been doing is we've been rating Rip Hunter on a scale of 1 to 10, where 1 is Captain Crunch and 10 is Captain Picard, or I can't remember the high one, but...
Picard.
It was Picard?
I think he was Captain Morgan this time.
Captain Morgan, which would give him a rating of what? 4?
Drunk.
You have to put a number to it, too.
He was not in any way effective, but he had swag.
That is accurate for Captain Morgan, then. But I would take it a different step. I'd say he was Admiral Nelson. He had a little bit of swag, but was completely ineffective, but still got the job done. Because Admiral Nelson, if you're not familiar, is the cheap version of Captain Morgan and tastes nowhere near as good.
Michelle, what do you think?
He was all kind of like, oh, I don't want to go leave the ship. I don't want to leave the ship. I'm so afraid. To getting decked by Jonah Hex. And I guess that hit the reboot button because then he was all like swag. So I'm going to have to say a 3 because you shouldn't have to get hit by Jonah Hex to all of a sudden flip on your swag button.
No, I think somebody told him he would get to do that cool coat flippy thing. And he was like, oh, okay, I'll go.
Not as cool as Doctor Strange's cloak flipping, though.
I'll give him a 3 because he leaves without giving Jonah Hex a good cheek. I mean, the man, Jonah's got a messed up cheek.
Nah, there was that scene where somebody mentioned his face and he's like, what's wrong with it? Like, nothing's wrong with it.
Like, nothing. Looks good, bro.
Because Ray said they could fix it and he was like, what? There's nothing. What do you mean?
I know, but they should have fixed him without him knowing about it.
You can't do that. That's not accurate to the character.
That's an awful thing to say.
Do we need to have a long conversation about consent, dude?
Yeah.
So, SP, you're going to go around and fix everyone's flaws. You're the Borg.
Resistance is futile.
I think he's a Dalek.
Resistance is futile.
That's right. Well, in any event, yeah, he had some swag, but he didn't have any leadership ability. And of course, he was hiding from his past. So I will give him a 3.
Yeah, I would say 4 is what I was leaning towards, because I kind of get his motivations after he explains his backstory in the Old West, is he's kind of afraid he'll fall back into that life that he was wanting to fall into. There's temptation.
Yeah, there was temptation, and they all will be tempted at one point in time if they haven't already. So Vandal Savage did not appear in this episode, but he was mentioned, and it was mentioned that the bracelet that our wonderful Kendra, a barista, which barista was not mentioned.
Oh, you beat me to it. I was about to be like, you know, she used to be a barista.
She had on her when she was killed. Therefore, the object can't be used to kill Vandal Savage. So that is something important that we learned in this episode as pertaining to Vandal.
I was kind of hoping that the older Kendra would talk about her past as a saloon girl, and it's her destiny to serve drinks to people.
Oh, yes. Oh,
that would have been awesome.
Oh, my God. Why did that not happen?
The destiny of barista.
I used to be a barista.
That's what all of our tombstones say. Used to be a barista. Here lies Kendra Saunders, barista.
Going back thousands of years.
I'm just waiting for the internet hate mail to roll in, so please send that to chris@gunnageek.com and ccjs@gunnageek.com because he has asked to get copies of all the hate mail because he likes it.
Captain Cold has an ability to sharpshoot with an old Winchester 92. Dude heads took that guy out or shot the gun from the bad guy's hand. I don't even remember the bad guy was, whatever gang it was.
If he had just shot that guy, he would have saved so much time.
And that would have been Leonard Snart's way to shoot the guy. But no, he didn't. He shot the gun out of his hand. What is Leonard doing?
Following Ray's and the other team's way. Because they didn't kill the kid before.
He's becoming a hero, SP.
Ray's having a bad influence on him.
He's becoming a hero only to be dropped in the next season because he became a hero. And he's no longer the criminal that he once was. Okay. Professor Stein... He's bucking time. He's bucking the laws of space and time here, trying to save the poor kid.
Well, he spots the lady drinking alone. It's the whole damsel in distress that leads to saving the son.
He's married.
Doesn't matter. Can't help himself.
Remember him back in the 70s being the ladies' man?
Yeah, but I don't think he was going in with the intention of, you know, be like, huh, I'm going to score in the Old West. It was more...
No, it was just, you know, there was a woman in need and... He had to help her.
What'd you guys think about the H.G. Wells reveal?
You know, I would have liked it if they didn't do the Bill Gates thing before.
Yes.
I was thinking the same thing.
All right. So Jonah Hex, tell me about Jonah Hex. I'm not a Jonah Hex fan. I know somebody in here knows more about Jonah Hex than I do.
I don't. I had a HeroClix of Jonah Hex I used to play in HeroClix games. I didn't see the crappy movie starring Josh Brolin a few years back.
Oh, that was so bad. I looked that up. Once again, going back to Gunna Geek, like 151, I did a list of all the comic book movie adaptations, and I did look at Jonah Hex just because it was a favorite of Naki's over on All Things Good Nerdy, and it lost so much money. It was like 160 out of 168 films.
But if you want the high-level description of Jonah Hex, we can go to Comic Vine's wiki. Here is the 3-sentence description for you guys. He's appeared in 416 issues of comics, by the way, because they give it at the very top. Jonah Hex is a Civil War veteran turned bounty hunter. His disfigured face and boorish personality don't win him many friends, but his code of honor and expert marksmanship skills mean he's always willing to fight for and protect the innocent and dispense lethal justice. Just like Chuck Norris. I added that part myself. Comic Vine didn't have it.
There's probably some meme out there like Chuck Norris thinks Jonah Hex is a Boy Scout or something like that. I don't know.
Well, everyone is compared to Chuck Norris. He's a bad man. The only person that was badder than Chuck Norris was Bruce Lee.
Samuel L. Jackson.
What was that movie, American Invasion, that he did where a bunch of Cubans were coming up and he went down to Florida and blew them all up?
Look, dude, all I really remember about Walker Texas Rangers, he had that show and he was in Enter the Dragon and Conan had a Walker lever for a while.
All I remember is he roundhouse kicks the bad guy in the face at the end of every episode.
Exactly.
There was also a clip that I remember seeing on Conan where he tells Haley Joel Osment he has AIDS, and he goes, "Walker told me I have AIDS," and smiles about it. And I was like, of course, Conan replayed it about 20 times.
I also remember his blonde DA girlfriend got kidnapped at least twice a season.
That's true.
Well, getting back to Jonah Hex, do you know who he gets to punch? Rip Hunter.
Everyone should punch Rip Hunter. He's got it coming.
He does. So we find out about the Pilgrim in this episode. The hunters aren't as bad as we thought they were. I mean, they just come into town thinking they own the place and they get taken care of in like 90 seconds. But they said the Pilgrim is coming and everybody's like, "Ooh, Pilgrim."
She's ready to straight up murder some kids.
Exactly.
It's a cold person right there. Take out the kids. And we get that next week. Is there anything specific that you guys want to talk about in this episode?
Again, Sarah Lance makes me question my sexuality. That whole, you know, cowboy hat.
The cowboy hat. Sarah with, oh, I was like, ooh. And I went to go add it in the notes, but Neil already had it in there.
No, these are mine.
Oh, they're your notes?
Yeah.
Sarah in the cowboy hat. Sigh. And then I put it next to it. Sigh. That was good when she put it on. Just the way they filmed it, they blocked it and everything. I'm like, oh, that's the best she's looked all season.
Yeah, 90% of these are mine. Yeah, like Snart again in all black and the cowboy hat. That was so nice.
That's about what the girlfriend said when she saw him on screen.
Snart?
Yeah, she's a big fan of Wentworth Miller.
Yeah.
Oh, who is it?
Well, yeah. You know, the weakest part of the show is the Hawk people.
That's why they're not coming back for season two.
Yay.
Yeah, no mention of Carter.
Yeah, there was mention of Carter.
Well, yes, there was.
Yes, there was. He was in the flashback.
That's all they talked about.
Yeah, she had to talk to Dr. McNally about it.
I didn't see him on screen, so I was blocking.
You saw his drawing.
That's where my quote came from, where she's all like, it's always tragedy or heartbreak. Again, this whole theme of the show is we want to change the timeline, but then again and again, time wants to happen and there's destiny.
You know what was good about this episode? You didn't get the Ray Kendra. Oh, lovey-dovey, we need to get back together.
Yeah, they did.
You've blocked out parts of this episode.
I obviously did.
You have repressed at the end where she's just like, oh, somebody said that I love you, Ray, because I've never met you before because I've never been a barista before.
Yes.
Hey, you know who else hasn't been a barista? Carter, because he's dead.
Still dead. Still dead.
Older Kendra said, you know, it ends in tragedy or heartbreak if it's not Carter, except Carter gets murdered in front of her every single time.
That's how you keep the romance strong. You get to pine for a few years because you're like, oh, my love is dead.
No, because sometimes she gets murdered right at the same time.
But then she doesn't remember him, and there's just a piece of her that she doesn't understand that's pining for him.
I just think it was dumb because it's like it always ends in tragedy and heartbreak, Carter or no Carter.
Exactly.
So you might as well get some while the getting's good.
Yes, I like that answer.
Me too. Ditto.
I'll drink to that right now. Not that there's anything good in here.
All right. Anything else on this episode before I get myself into more trouble?
You know, there's something weird going on with your face.
Yeah. Oh, you got quotes, Haley?
Of course I have quotes.
Okay, let's run down the quotes. This is a Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. special here.
No trouble. Sure, that'll happen.
Team's always getting itself into trouble.
You killed him. You're welcome.
Nice.
Now, that was cool. I like how we learned about Stein's dad being kind of like a criminal type and
just kind of a con man.
Yeah. And it's like, and then that whole nice clean kill that Snart does, which starts the bar fight. Yeah. Awesome.
It was a clean kill. Nobody cares about clean.
We may have gotten into a barroom brawl back in town. Well, that was entirely predictable.
Entirely.
And accurate.
The past is prologue.
Yes.
That's a good one.
That's it.
All right. So that's it for this episode. Michelle, what do we got coming up next week?
Oh, next week. We have Last Refuge. That'd be episode 12.
Yeah.
It originally aired Thursday, April 21st, 2016. The team is targeted by the Pilgrim, a deadly assassin who wants to erase them from the timeline by killing their younger selves. As a protective countermeasure, Rip decides that Sarah, Snart, Roy, Professor Stein, and Jack need to kidnap their past selves first before the Pilgrim gets to them, coming face to face with their younger versions of themselves proves to be both a physical and emotional challenge for certain members of the team who'd rather forget their past.
I remember this. It's good. This is going to be a fun one with Sarah meeting the younger Sarah. That is awesome. Can't wait for that. So who directed it?
Rachel Talalay, who I hope gets the Captain Marvel job.
Oh, that would be amazing.
That would be amazing. And it was written by Chris Fedek and Matthew Mala.
Yeah, Chris Fedek with the Chuck and Forever passed to him as well. And he's listed as a producer on the next season of Legends of Tomorrow, I believe. I saw him on one of the lists. We'll go over that later. So now is the time where we look past into the episode and we see about any of the DC Easter eggs or pop culture references that have popped out in the episode. So, Chris, why don't you take the first one?
So we touched on it at the top of the show. There is an absolute Magnificent Seven vibe to everything.
Yes. I mean, this totally was both Magnificent Seven. I would say Back to the Future was involved in there and everything else as well. So Michelle, what do you got next?
Salvation, Texas was the name of a town featured in a 2006 Jonah Hex story. In that tale, the town wasn't run by criminals, but a particularly controlling sect of nuns.
Ooh, town controlled by nuns.
They had rulers to slap your knuckles there.
Not going to mess with those.
No.
Haley, what do we got next?
Kubert's Barbershop sign. One of the storefronts in Salvation features a pretty familiar name to the DC comic fans, Kubert. In this instance, it's likely a nod to Joe Kubert, whose work on Jonas Hex comics helped to craft the look of the character's early years, and he also worked on a lot of classic Hawkman stories, which has been a big part of Legends.
Yeah, that was cool. Chris, what do we got?
Jonah Hex, we talked about him. He was the big hype point for this to get all the comic fans in. We had Jonah Hex in this episode, and while his origin is that of a post-Civil War bounty hunter, he has had some time travel adventures himself. In the DC comic universe, he found himself flung to the far future after the events of Crisis on Infinite Earths.
And of course, we talked about this one before. H.G. Wells, the child Stein saves in the episode, is actually a young H.G. Wells, whose The Time Machine is widely regarded as one of the earliest and best novels on the topic of time travel. I just have to interject here and just say, but we all know Warehouse 13 told the true story of H.G. Wells, and Shannon, that's for you.
Much better version.
Yep.
Shannon, my co-host on Voices of Defiance, who is a Warehouse 13 fiend. So Michelle, what do we got next?
John Wayne, we talked about that, how he comes up with yet another amazing alias, but I still say it's better than Dr. Lecter.
True. Haley, what do we got?
Turnbull, who sacked Culvert, Oklahoma, is a villain from the comics. He was also the villain in the Jonah Hex movie, where he was played by John Malkovich.
Was John Malkovich being John Malkovich while he was playing Turnbull?
Yes.
I don't know. I haven't seen the movie.
We'll go with that.
For number eight, what do we got, Chris?
Hannibal Hawks is name dropped and referenced. He's not just an Old West hero by the name of Nighthawk, but in modern stories, it's been revealed that he was indeed another iteration of Prince Khufu, a.k.a. Hawkman. He was not a barista.
And number nine.
Clemmer and Sons sign. One of the Salvation storefronts is that of Clemmer and Sons, apparently the business owned by Phil Clemmer's family. Clemmer is a writer and producer on Legends of Tomorrow.
And last but not least, Haley, what do we got rounding up the end?
D. Ged's drugstore sign. Another one of the signs in the town. This one was for an apothecary named D. Geds, which is probably a nod to David Geds, who directed last week's episode, Progeny.
Now, I get the nods to the comics, but nods to, like, last week's director? Like, okay.
There's one missing from this.
Yep.
Uh-oh.
Near the end of the episode, Snark goes to Rip. Do you have one of those flashy things to wipe out their memory?
Yeah, the Men in Black. Yeah, forgot about that.
Nobody sing the song. It's not fair use.
Which is a Marvel Easter egg.
That's true. Yeah, because they were thinking about doing that crossover now, too.
No, not thinking about Men in Black is a Marvel property.
Right, but I meant the crossover with 21 Jump Street.
That might be canceled, thankfully.
That sounds like one of those things that people talk about, and if you really think about it, they're like, that's not going to happen.
They're blaming the cancellation on the failure of Ghostbusters, but I think it's more they just realized this is a terrible, terrible idea.
What were we smoking?
There are forums for writing your fan fiction. You don't need to make a movie.
That's right. So the list that we read off of was, again, from comicbook.com. We take their list every week, and then we add our own stuff, like Michelle saying Men in Black. So go ahead, check that out. We're going to get into a lot of news. If you're climbing at the bit to get into some DC shows this October, we've got a lot of information for you. Starting off with a great Stephen Amell post, isn't it, Chris?
It really is. If you guys know, well, you guys probably have noticed, rather, Stephen Amell's fairly active on the Instagram, the Facebook, the Twitter. He likes to share glimpses from on set. Well, he did a tweet a picture of a bunch of folks sitting around, and all you could see was their boots. And if you looked at it, you realized it's the boots of The Flash, The Green Arrow, Supergirl, and I'm forgetting a set of boots all of a sudden.
Adam.
Lance.
Yes.
And Sarah.
And White Canary. All sitting around in a circle, i.e. they're prepping for the crossover episode now.
It was nice seeing the boots. And it really could have been anybody in costume, but...
It was the stunt guys.
It was probably the stunt guys. Stephen Amell was just like, here, tell me to take this picture. Yeah, we're good. See you guys later.
Well done, Stephen Amell, if that was actually it. Well done. Now, this next one, we're not going to go line by line on this next one, but CW released season synopsis for all the DC TV shows. The links will be in the show notes. If you want to delve in to the synopsis, you can. Notably, the release dates, I don't think we talked about this before, the release dates for the premiere episodes of these shows came out. October 4th, Haley, that's The Flash.
Yep. Gonna kick it off this year.
That's right. Number two is Arrow, coming in October 5th. These are all 8 p.m. shows, by the way. The next week, Legends of Tomorrow is October 13th, and sandwiched in there is Supergirl on Monday, October 10th. So the first 2 weeks of October will be the CW shows. Did you guys want to talk about anything specific in those?
Flashpoint.
Yep.
What? I think it's important that Flash is happening first.
It's going to have to set things in motion, I think.
Definitely. Now, they have said in Arrow that Flashpoint's not going to affect Arrow very much. It will a little bit, but not very much. And then the synopsis of Legends of Tomorrow and some of the interviews that we'll talk about later, they said, yeah, not so much either. So Flashpoint is largely probably to get Supergirl in, as well as continue the Flash storyline and maybe affect a little bit Arrow. That's what I took out of all of that.
I assumed what they were going to do is basically reset at the end of the first episode back to the regular world, except now Supergirl's in our world.
I think it's going to take a few episodes because they made a big point of showing Wally West as Kid Flash, and that exists in this Flashpoint world. So I think we're going to get 3 or 4 episodes before Barry kind of realizes, what I did here was dumb. I need to fix things.
My bad, guys.
The Supergirl synopsis was pretty cool, too, because they're laying a new road over on the CW. And as we'll talk about later, all the cast and crew is very gracious about CBS, but they feel like CW is coming home. And it's great talking points that they're saying. But really, with all the other shows on the CW, Supergirl really belonged on the CW. I don't know. Haley, what do you think? You're like a girl.
I don't know. I'm just excited for it to all be in the same universe now. I'm really pumped about that.
Yeah. Big singular universe person. Mm-hmm. That's me. All right. Moving on to the next one. Who's the Dolph Lundgren fan of the bunch here? I mean, we don't have Wing. I know he's a big Dolph Lundgren fan. Anybody else?
I would break you.
Okay, Chris, what do you got?
I'm not really a Dolph Lundgren fan very much, but it was announced just this morning, I think it was, and I saw Stephen Amell tweeting about it very excitedly. That Dolph Lundgren is going to guest in season 5 of Arrow. He's going to be the head of the Bratva, the Russian mob in the flashbacks. You might know him best from things like Rocky IV, Universal Soldier, The Punisher, the first Punisher movie, which was terrible. He-Man, which I believe they called Masters of the Universe, which was also terrible, and The Expendables.
Wing made me do a podcast on Legends once on Universal Soldier. I believe that was like Legends podcast number 74 or something like that.
I forgot Wing loves Dolph Lundgren for some reason.
Because he likes crappy action movies.
Yeah, that's what that is.
Wing, if you're listening to this, go ahead, pipe in with your love of the Dolph. And I know he's going to be tuning into Arrow this year as well. So, Michelle, well, let's move on into the DC TV news. Why don't you take the first one here about The Flash?
Excellent. Susan Walters who some people call her a professional TV mom. And yes, she's been on Teen Wolf as Lydia's mother and on The Vampire Diaries as Tyler's mother. But what I like about her is that she actually takes those roles and does a lot with them. And she has been cast as Caitlin's mom. So she's going to be Dr. Carla Tannhauser, a biomedical engineer, similar to Caitlin. So that's going to be great to see.
I read this article, and of course, there's going to be the typical successful mother-daughter, like coldness in the relationship and stuff. So that's going to be cool. And it's also going to be cool that Dr. Carla is not going to be Moira Queen, because nobody wants another Moira Queen in the DC universe. Nope. I don't know if anybody else does.
Bring back Moira with Flashpoint. No Moira, no Arrow.
Haley, save us.
No, they're going to have a spinoff series with Moira and Laurel. It's going to be called Moiral.
And Tommy, you know, them hanging out during the 5 years.
Tommy, do we even care about Tommy anymore?
Hey guys, remember Tommy?
That's going to be called The Expendables of Arrow. Subtitle, F you, Chris. We know you won't watch this.
We're going to have crossover every season, so you have to.
Actually, I like Moira, though.
I did, too. She's kind of cool.
Yeah, I think it was time for her to go. But anyway, Haley, there is another Flash news story to go through, right?
Right. So they're casting some villains, and it looks like they might be casting Mirror Master and the Top, who is one of my favorite ridiculous villains. Because I'm the Top, and you're the Bottom.
He's almost as good as the Spot from Spider-Man.
Yes. But apparently, according to this article, they're going to gender swap the Top and have a young woman play the part. Which makes me think that there will be a scene where she is straddling one of the male heroes and say something about, no, I'm the Top. And it will be painful and clunky and awesome.
But it'll be gift like crazy on Tumblr.
So it looks like also that Mirror Master has actually been cast.
Oh, has it? I just saw the casting call. I didn't see that they'd actually cast somebody.
Apparently, they cast Greg Damon from Friday Night Lights and Starcrossed as Mirror Master.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. So, Haley, I'm going to let you take this next one as well, because you are probably the most excited about this next new story.
I hadn't seen this one yet. Okay. So, apparently, they're going to do a musical crossover between Flash and Supergirl, which is something I've been calling for.
Yeah. Combining the singing talents of the Flash and Supergirl, who are both on Glee.
Stephen Amell's probably just sitting there going, dodge the bullet.
But he still has to grow the goatee.
You know, I think this would be a good time, because it says around season 13 or 14. So this would be a good time for Steven to start that Gonna Gleek podcast. So he can, like, you know, tie in for that. Be good time, Steven.
They say it's going to be in the back half. So, you know, after the mid-season finale, they'll do this. Maybe the mid-season premiere.
I think it's only fair to announce something Steven has been keeping a secret. The official launch of the Gonna Gleek podcast coincides with a special edition episode after the musical crossover. He will be starting Gonna Gleek episode 1, discussing this, and then doing his favorite television show in the world, Glee, from that point on.
That's right. So yep. Episode 9 is about where they cut off for the holiday break every year. So this will be like beginning of February or so.
No, this will be after that spring hiatus that they've been doing lately. You know, they come back, they do like 3 episodes, and then it's like, oh, time for a break again.
That's right. So just stay tuned for when the episodes come out, and that is when Steven will be doing the Gonna Gleek podcast. And if you're interested in appearing on the Gonna Gleek podcast, go ahead and hit up Steven on Twitter at Steven John Drew, or you can catch him on Facebook.
Right. And you need to, if you want to be on the show with him, you have to be able to sing, because he's performing the entire podcast.
Mm-hmm.
It's true.
Song and dance numbers.
Maybe we
it's
can
gonna
get
be really impressive.
Steven's brother to perform on the podcast as well. That'd be awesome.
The kids will be backup dancers.
I can't wait until he hears this episode.
I know. We love you, Steven.
So, Michelle, what do we have in the director pool for The Flash this year?
It's Kevin Smith. Look, I enjoy Kevin Smith, but I get a little annoyed when, like, he says he wants to do something, and then it's like 5,000 headlines. It's like, Kevin Smith wants a sandwich, and it's like everywhere. But anyway, he is confirmed to direct a Flash and a Supergirl. Also, it was said that CW is focusing on diversity in the directing pool. And Mark Guggenheim has said that 50% of the Arrow directors are diverse, which just means non-white males.
Mm-hmm.
So that's good.
Yeah. And Kreisberg chipped in and said they've offered over 20 women directing jobs on the different shows as well. And I've noticed this season as we go through the director pool that more and more women are doing. And also over on the Marvel side, especially with Jessica Jones and with Daredevil, there's more and more women popping up as directors and writers for all that. So it's great to see the diversity in gender and race in the comic book movie stuff. And I've talked about this before, where the stable's getting kind of thin in terms of people that were experienced doing this stuff before, and they're expanding it to different people. And it's great that they're using diversity to expand it as well. I really like that, because there's no reason other people can't enjoy this stuff. And I enjoy their products. So, yay, I'm glad they're doing it.
The TV industry in general kind of got called out on sexism in particular this year. Like, hardcore.
Oh, and CBS got called out for their fall lineup because it's all white guys.
Oh, yeah. MacGruber, MacGyver, whatever that is. Is it still coming back or did they cancel it? Please tell me they canceled that, because that did not look good. What? Ugh. 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 So, Haley, since you run the Crimson Comet, do you want to take this next one with the dark?
Yeah, I'll take this one. So, the CW has decided to do something completely different with season 3 of The Flash. They're going to have an evil speedster be the villain this season.
What a novel concept.
It's going to be new and innovative. No one's going to see it coming.
It's going to be huge.
Huge. It's going to be Savitar, who I have no idea who this guy is. But apparently he's a Cold War test pilot who was struck by lightning during a flight mission, which is how you get speed powers, is getting struck by lightning. And his name comes from the Hindu god of motion.
And apparently he's already battled speedsters like Johnny Quick and Max Mercury and Wally West, trying to steal their speed and transfer it to his followers.
If this means we get Max Mercury and Johnny Quick in the Flash universe, I am totally on board with that, because Max Mercury was such an interesting character. And if you're not familiar with him, go read some of the Flash books from the early and mid 90s, specifically the Return of Barry Allen arc and the Terminal Velocity arcs. And he is a very interesting character in there.
What do you bet that they actually show them? Or maybe it's like their backs as Savitar in a flashback as Savitar is battling them or whatever. So
depends on how they do the origin for Savitar in here, whether it's a modern day take on it where he's just a test pilot in the 20-aughts and gets struck by lightning.
Mm. Because they've kind of made a point of the show that superpowers started around the time the show started. Before that, there weren't a lot of vigilantes and
metas
and stuff running around doing stuff.
Yeah, basically in the TV universe, the explosion started metahumans, right?
Yeah.
With some slight exceptions, yeah. Such as the Hawks.
Right, for the most part.
They did start, I don't remember the specific episode, but they were talking about some metahumans forming outside of the explosion and they were scratching their heads on it.
They found people who had powers before.
That was Vixen.
The particle accelerator.
That was the reference when they brought Vixen onto Arrow.
Ah.
Right, but that's magic.
And we're not going to explain magic.
It's just science we don't yet understand, SP.
No, it's just magic.
That's not what Marvel says. We're going to call it magic and we're not going to explain it. That's what it's going to be.
That's what Thor says in Thor 1.
By the hoary hosts of Hogarth.
This is the universe with Constantine.
Hashtag bring back Constantine, right?
Friday night's open.
So, Chris, one of your favorite characters is Caitlin, and there's an interesting take on her this year in The Flash.
So we all know characters are going to be different as a result of Flashpoint. We've heard a little bit about what Cisco's differences are going to be. Danielle Panabaker was doing an interview and asked, how different is this Caitlin from the one we know? According to her, she's totally different. All the relationships are very different. So that's your nice little tease to realize that Flashpoint has changed everything. These dynamics you're so used to loving with the Flash crew, they don't exist anymore.
Imagine that. Until it all gets fixed in a couple of episodes.
That's true.
So we'll see about that. So Michelle, did you see this video, this DC All Access video with Grant Gustin?
Well, in this one, Grant talks about how Barry, that he's forgetting a lot of memories, and it means he's forgetting his powers too. It's like he's having a full Back to the Future moment. And then the Barry's memories are starting to get replaced from the previous timeline with the new timeline. And when he realizes those memories are replacing other memories, that's when he starts to realize how selfish a decision he was.
So is the Back to the Future moment the moment he realizes he's losing his hand because he went back and he dated his mom and his mom didn't get together with his dad? Is that the moment?
Probably.
He lost the hand because he got Skywalkered.
Flash got Skywalkered. Okay.
Good job, Barry.
A lot of great things coming out, as well as Lena Luthor. Wow, I didn't even know this character existed. And then I started doing some research going, this is going to be good. So, Haley, what do we got with Lena?
Well, because Supergirl's a girl, her villains must also be girls, because that's how it works.
Logic.
Science. Yep. But Lena Luthor's not exactly a villain. She's going to try and turn Luthor Corps into a force for good, and they've cast the part with Katie McGrath, who was on Merlin. I believe she played Morgan.
Yes.
Yes. Merlin was not very good. No, wait, that's a different Merlin. I'm thinking of Camelot. Camelot was not
very
good.
Camelot was not very good. No, it was pretty crappy.
Yep.
Now, this Merlin was the British, and it was pretty good.
I haven't seen it.
And she was also on NBC's Dracula that lasted for, I can't remember.
I have no memory of this show at all.
Was it Dracula or Dr. Acula?
I can't remember.
Sorry, I had to go with the Scrubs reference.
It was that guy from the Tudors.
Henry Cavill?
No, Rhys Davies. Yeah, something Rhys Davies.
Oh, yeah, John Rhys Davies.
Yeah, he's very pretty.
And then there was electricity, and then it got canceled. I wonder why.
You mean something that is sci-fi fantasy or something like that didn't work on NBC? I'm shocked. I'm shocked and appalled.
Well, it wasn't that great of a show.
Heroes was good for a season.
Yeah, I guess so.
Except for the finale, yeah.
Well, even the finale, right up to the last 5-10 minutes.
No, the finale was super weak. Because they decided, okay, we got to set up season two. Should we wrap up season one? Eh.
Heroes gave us Spock.
Yeah.
Heroes gave us Spock.
Also gave us Masioka, a really cool role, too.
Actually, American Horror Story gave us Spock.
Yeah, Heroes gave us Hayden, Panny, whatever.
Nashville.
Masioka.
Save the cheerleader, save the world.
I know. Anyway, back to news.
Yes, let's save this podcast by talking about Miss Martian. Michelle, who is Miss Martian?
Okay, as reported by Deadline, Sharon Leal will appear on the show as Supergirl, as Miss Martian, while Chris Wood will play Mon-El.
Ooh.
Sharon Leal previously appeared as Zuri Ellis in the NBC series Grimm. Chris Wood's character will be who emerges from the pod glimpsed in the Supergirl season one finale. Well, spoiler alert, Mon-El is a character with powers similar to that of Supergirl and hails from the planet Daxam. In the comic, Mon-El has close ties with the Legion of Superheroes.
Looking forward to that. Yes, spoilers on who was in the pod, because we're all wondering about that.
What's in the pod? What's in the pod?
It's like over on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., we're like, okay, who's the new director? We were literally talking about that like 5 days before they released who's the new director. I'm like, come on. Wanted to wait for the season. Come on back. Chris didn't want to be spoiled, so he left.
Chris is like 4 or 5 episodes behind still.
It's a good 4 or 5 episodes.
I know. I'll get there.
All right. So this next news story I'm going to take because it's great. It talks about the Blu-ray and DVD release, which I believe was this week, a couple of days ago.
It's out now because I just saw a friend of the network, Steve Boyd, had his copy.
Okay. So they were talking in the news stories about all the graded deleted scenes and bloopers for season one that they found pirated copies on YouTube. But by the time I got to actually read this story tonight and press play on all of them, this video has been deemed DC proprietary or Warner Brothers proprietary and has been removed. Click the next one. The same thing.
Oh, they're all here now.
No, go ahead and click them. They're not there.
The one of them just started auto playing.
The first one. Yeah. But that the first one is.
Oh, the rest of them got pulled.
Is the official tease. The rest of them.
Well, that means you can't find them anywhere on the internet now. Sorry, guys.
No, it was on the internet once and did not spread any further. We promise they are nowhere else on the internet.
They got it locked down.
Yep, that's how it works.
You got to lock it up, man. Lock it up.
Let's use some time travel and go back to SDCC, Chris.
Okay, let's go back to SDCC. I'm glad you brought that up, SP, because we got some more details about what's going to be going on with Supergirl from the SDC press event. They talked to all of the actors there. Melissa Benderstwood said, "It feels like we're an amazing company. It feels like we're where we should have been all along. The first three scripts I read already feel more vibrant, exciting, and rich." This is all about the move from CBS to CW. Mikad Brooks, who plays James Olsen, says, "It feels younger. It feels more vibrant. It's not a dig at CBS, obviously." David Harewood, the Martian Manhunter, said on the regards to their move, "I think maybe CBS, I don't think it's their natural fit, and I think they're trying to do less of the alien superhero stuff, whereas on CW, they want more of it." And then Sarah Schefter, the executive producer, said, "When you say metahuman to someone at the CW, they know what you mean. I think it will be a lot of fun." So everyone's on board with this move from CBS to CW, but obviously they're on board because they get to keep jobs.
I like Sarah's comment because it points to the fact that when they were talking about the concepts of the show in the CBS offices, they were like, "Wait a minute, it's not CSI? I don't get it.
What's a meta human?"
Yeah. What?
What letters make up the title of this show?
When do we send Agent Gibbs in for a crossover? I don't understand.
So there you go. So, I mean, they were obviously not trying to dig at CBS. It's all the same company. They were just like, okay, we're happy to be at CW. We're happy to have jobs, as you guys said before.
I'm slightly cynical, though, so just keep that in mind.
Who, you?
Hashtag no laurel, no arrow. Go ahead, say it again. Go ahead, Chris.
I don't want to. You're going to quote me out of context, and this is going to get on the internet, and people are going to think I really give a crap about the character.
Yeah, sure, go ahead. It'll bring in viewers.
Hashtag no laurel, no arrow.
There you go.
I hate you guys so much.
Who likes Vixen the most?
I love Laurel the most.
Haley, do you like Vixen?
All I've seen of Vixen is when she showed up on Arrow. I haven't had a chance to go watch that show yet.
Michelle, do you like Vixen?
Yes, I do. It's actually a good... I've seen the CW Seed show. God, could you have made that any easier? It's actually pretty good. But when it comes to Legends of Tomorrow, we got a first look at the new Vixen, Mary McCabe's forerunner, Amaya Dewey. This is the Vixen from the 1940s. If you've been seeing other news about Legends of Tomorrow, they're going to the 1940s. And again, the costuming on Legends of Tomorrow is amazing. I mean, that's one thing they got right. And the set photos look good too.
It's not costuming. Gideon makes all of that for them. Okay, guys, come on.
Those two look like they could be related.
Yeah, they could. And there's speculation on will the two actually meet. And it's actually a possibility. The only reason they didn't go with the actress that had been playing Vixen on screen was because she had a scheduling conflict because she got another job. So that's the only reason they went this way, which was actually kind of ingenious, but the character still lives. Now, talking about Legends of Tomorrow, Phil Klemmer and Mark Guggenheim sat down at SDCC and had an interview before the CW panel. I actually don't know if it was one panel or whatever, but they sat down for an interview and they were talking about kind of the fails of Legends of Tomorrow season one. It's like, well, you know, we didn't do a pilot. We just went right into it and it didn't allow us to reset anything. And that reminded me of Stargate SG-1 for those that were fans of that show, like with the Zats, you know, one shot, it knocks somebody out, two shots, it kills them, and three shots, it gets rid of the body. You know, they would love to go back and redo that on Stargate SG-1, but they had to live with that for 10 seasons and actually more than that because they went on to Stargate Universe after that. I think 17 total seasons of Stargate, or 17 years Stargate was on, and they had to live with that mistake from the beginning. So they're talking about that sort of stuff with Legends of Tomorrow. And they said that we took the time during the hiatus. We really focused our efforts on this show. We took it apart and we rebuilt it piece by piece. And it, I think with the costuming that you were just talking about, with the look into, okay, what are we going to do with the show now that we've had the big bad villain and we've taken care of him, we have to move somewhere else. So I think Legends of Tomorrow really promises something good for season two.
It's not costuming. It's authentic vintage stuff constructed by Gideon.
Yes, Chris. We know, Chris.
Thank you.
You know what else is authentic and not constructed by Gideon? Brandon Ruth's beard.
Yeah, there's no way that's fake.
The CW wig department is at it again.
So what's up with Brandon Routh there, Haley?
He's got the whole stranded desert island mountain man look going with crazy eyes and all. It's a look.
He's got a staff and he's got a polo shirt that's obviously been...
You know, the polo shirt's in rough shape. He should probably just take it off.
Oh, yes. I agree.
And Chris, are you jealous of his facial hair there? I think that's pretty awesome.
I am not.
That's indicative of a mountaineer right there.
Exactly.
And they say that it is not on Lian Yu, but with that, I have to say they're already shooting on Lian Yu.
Why does he have bangs? Like, why did he cut himself bangs if he's like stranded on a desert island? That's what I'm not understanding.
Maybe he can't grow bangs. Some people can't. So they're saying that it's not Lian Yu, but you already have the film crew there. You've got the prison that's storing Deathstroke. You've got stuff on Lian Yu. I bet you they're filming it on Lian Yu. Lian Yu's real.
Well, it might be the same set, but I bet he got stranded in time again, and this time it was some dangerous time, place, whatever, and they're going to show up a couple years later, and he's going to be Crazy Mountain Man Ray.
Ooh, I hope it's with dinosaurs.
Do you think he shacked up with some lucky girl from that era?
It was a Kendra from a different time period.
So you're saying there were baristas when there were dinosaurs?
That's how it works.
Going for his local coffee and hooks up with the barista.
But it's somehow after ancient Egypt, but still dinosaurs because science.
I know nothing about Stargirl. Nothing at all. But this looks intriguing to me. Do either of you two know anything about Stargirl?
Nope.
No.
All right, I wish Neil was here because he probably knows something about Stargirl. It looks like Sarah Gray from the Power Rangers movie is cast as Stargirl, and Stargirl will be rounding out the Justice Society of America lineup along with Hourman and Vixen and the still on cast Dr. Midnight and Obsidian, and will be a recurring role in season two. So I'm looking forward to Stargirl. Stargirl was created by Geoff Johns and debuted in the 1999's The Stars and Stripe number 0. She wields a cosmic staff that allows her to manipulate energy, and she can fly. So that's cool.
And Geoff Johns did pull her into the JSA episodes of Smallville a few years back also. So she's been on the small screen before, the character at least.
Wait, cosmic staff, cosmic ring, are they going to bring in the Lantern Corps?
I don't think they can. They've name dropped, and even the name drops of Hal Jordan have gone by the wayside.
They're not the same energy, I believe, in the comics either. So I think cosmic is just a commonly used term for it versus SP showing us the Green Lantern book right now.
The one that just dropped yesterday, Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps number 2. This is a great book. I love it. And if you want to learn more about Green Lanterns, or Hal Jordan, go pick up that series. And let's just do the homage to Neil. Rebirth. There you go. We have one last TV news story, and it's about Mark Guggenheim. Who's the Mark Guggenheim fan?
Of course, it's me. It's me. It's got to be me. He talks Vixen in the JSA. Hey, so we already know it won't be Mary McKay. We talked about that earlier. She'll be Amira Deary, Mary's grandmother from the 1940s and a member of the Justice Society of America. You've got Captain Cold, who was a criminal and out for himself. He's replaced by Vixen, who is the definition of a superhero. And she's a member of the JSA from the 1940s. Everything is prim and proper, not stuck up, but she does things right. You have this team that doesn't do things right. They're a bunch of mess ups. So she's an interesting counterpoint.
They did not say mess ups.
I had to edit that because this is a clean podcast.
Clemmer and Guggenheim were very foul-mouthed in their interview. That was not cool to read, but hey, you know, it's what they did. So, yep, lots of Vixen, lots of JSA were looking for that.
I'm glad that they have a clearer version for Legends of Tomorrow, because even I realized, like, last year when they were talking Legends of Tomorrow, even I'm just like, wait, Savage, but they killed him, and that hasn't been explained yet, and what? But now it seems like they have, like, a nice clear vision, so.
Nothing that happened after this episode is important.
We just need Jonah Hex. Oh, you know what? They can bring back Jonah Hex because he lives at the end of this episode. He rides off into the sunset.
And that means they can go into another Western saloon and start another old-timey Western bar fight, and all will be right with the world.
Make sure he brings Sarah's cowboy hat with him.
Oh, yeah.
And Sarah.
She could get her own cowboy hat.
Yeah.
I'm sure Gideon still has it.
Gideon keeps it somewhere safe.
Gideon can make another one. You were just saying Gideon makes a lot of stuff, Chris.
It's only one-offs, man. It's not authentic if it makes duplicates.
I would like Gideon to try and just put Sarah in a cowboy hat all the time from now on. Like, Gideon's got a thing for Sarah, too.
And I'm not sure that Gideon still exists when we get to the finale, so there's that, too.
Like I said, I don't remember that anything that happens after this, because it's not important.
Well, you've completely invalidated the back half of this summer for us, so thank you.
No, you don't need to finish. It's fine.
So, yeah, that's what they need to do. 1940s, bar fight, brawl. Yeah.
Well, we all have our things. You know, Chuck, that's good at the wedding. You don't have to go any further. How I Met Your Mother, episode 200 is it. You don't have to go any further. I mean, there's just there's series like that. But this has another season, Haley, so we're hoping you tune in.
Well, the next season might be good. I'm just saying the rest of this season I don't care about because there aren't any more time traveling bar fights.
So, Chris, what's going on with Pop Funko?
So it's a shame Neil's not here because he's our resident Funko Pop addict, I think. He even makes custom ones, things like that. And I know he'd been struggling to find some of the SDCC exclusives and that had come out. But he did find a news story that says, hey, guys, we're getting Legends of Tomorrow Funko Pops, it would appear. There's nothing officially announced, but if you go on the Hot Topic website, there are three figures from Legends of Tomorrow that are marked out of stock. So we are getting an Atom Funko Pop, a White Canary Funko Pop, and a Firestorm Pop. And they look pretty cool. The Atom one looks really cool, even though it's an Iron Man ripoff.
I would have to buy a high rise in downtown Chicago or something to stock it full of all the Pop Funkos that I think are cool.
I have so much shelf space now.
I'm very tempted to get the White Canary because it's White Canary. It's Sarah.
I know. That's the one I would be looking at out of this trio would be the White Canary. It'd be awesome.
Then you can pair it with your Oliver Queen.
That's right.
On your shelf.
No, they need to make a Nyssa.
Does he have the 5 o'clock shadow?
And no mask.
Does he have sleeves?
He has sleeves. It's the old suit. For all you Funko Pop collectors that are listening to the audio podcast, I showed one of the 2015 summer convention exclusives of the Unmasked Arrow.
What number is it? Because they're all number series, right?
Number 208.
I would so buy the Nyssa White Canary set.
Is there a Nyssa one yet?
No, there needs to be. I'm saying.
They need to make a Nyssa one.
They need to make a Rogue. That's what they need to make.
Nyssa.
I'll be in my bunk.
Me too.
Talking about Rogue and Marvel, Mark Guggenheim is not only focusing on Arrow, but he's focusing on a different superhero archer. And I have to warn you, this is not a DC comic story, but it does pertain to Mark Guggenheim. He is writing the Civil War II one-shot, The Accused, on the trial of Hawkeye from the perspective of Daredevil. Apparently, there's some gorgeous cover art by David Mack and the inside art by Ramon Box and Gary Brown. So that is coming up. Check that one out. And Mark Guggenheim has been doing some amazing stuff in both DC and Marvel camps. So that is cool. All right, you guys ready for some feedback? We got some great feedback this week. The first one was from Cajun Sean. He tweeted us a Screen Rant picture of the Justice Society headquarters in Legends of Tomorrow. And Haley, I gotta say, this looks a lot like Agent Carter style stuff.
Yeah.
Because it's basically in the same era. So cool. Can't wait for that.
I'm so jealous of all the barrister bookshelves they have in the background there. I want them to put my geek swag in.
That'd be cool, right?
I have two sets of barrister bookshelves upstairs I've filled with my nerd collection, but those are sweet.
Do you light them up?
I have not yet, but I might since I'm starting to play with smart home LED automation and stuff like that. I don't really need any more excuses to play with toys, I'll be honest.
For the listener at home, what is a barrister bookshelf?
Think like the old school legal bookshelves, the kind of ones they had where it's kind of a shelf with a glass door that folds over top of it that you can see the spines of the books. And when you want to get the book out, you literally pick up the door and then you can slide it back into the bookshelf itself to get the books in and out. Or in my case, the Captain Mal replica pistol and things like that out.
So what is the importance of something like this?
it keeps crap off my stuff.
That's right. Reduces the dust and actually...
It makes it less likely my dog can get a hold of it.
In Haley's case, the cat, too.
Yeah, or the cat that lives in my house that snuck in here, and that's why I had to disappear for a few minutes before it caused trouble.
So Ferris saw the news that Arrow was going to bring on Dolph Lundgren, and he tweeted us that assuming that Arrow's going to end the season when Dolph kills everybody.
He was the Punisher.
I don't think anybody's going to buy Dolph Lundgren as a Russian villain. I just don't see it happening.
Yeah, no. That's completely out of character.
Typecasting CW DC, go figure.
Well, he obviously liked it because he took the job.
Well, he needs money.
I know.
The Expendables thing's kind of done for a little bit.
Yeah, no more. Are they going to make the, what are they calling, the Lady Expendables?
Or the Expendables?
Yeah. Are they going to make that or is that official?
I thought it was, but I don't know because I'm not really a fan of the Expendables franchise.
I saw a news story on the Ocean's 8 and that looks good with the casting.
When I need my crappy over-the-top action movie, I default to Fast and the Furious, thank you very much, not Expendables, because it's got The Rock.
And The Rock makes everything better.
He's the people's champion.
With the people's eyebrow.
He's also the hardest Pokemon to catch in Pokemon Go. Try and catch Pokerock, you can't do it.
Gotta catch them all. So, Michelle, you've been putting some great stuff out on our Facebook page, and you posted a news story, I think it was earlier today, that actually got some feedback. So you want to tell everybody about that?
One of the CW superhero characters is supposed to come out of the closet during this season. They didn't say which show, and they haven't said which character.
They actually want to keep it a surprise, actually, and they want to see you have fun with the character's development.
Yeah, and then on Facebook, so Scott Mackey actually replied and said Barry and Joe's boss is already gay, Curtis is gay, and Sarah is, well, she's not bi-curious, she's bisexual.
Yeah.
Isn't this a non-issue? And I said I agreed, and then he replied, good, just making sure, didn't want to come off like a dick about it, but I wish shows would handle it like Battlestar did, that it was just there and a part of life and not make that a big make a big deal about it. That's how you gain acceptance. And then earlier today, news came out that CW Seed is going to have a new show. The character's name is Ray, not to be confused with Ray Palmer. He's actually going to be he's a lead and he's gay. But it's one of those things, it's like, I really don't like, okay, I love diversity, I love inclusion, but that was like the new, that headline. It's like, there's this new show, this lead character's gay, and then there's like really nothing else about the character. You know, being gay isn't, you know, that's like just part of you.
Yeah, that's not the defining main characteristic of that guy. He's gay. Oh, and he has superpowers too. No.
On the surface, I totally agree. I really do. And I think it's just, okay, you know, it's part of life. I work with people that are gay every, you know, see them every day. It's no big deal. It's like, hey, you know, you're a person, I'm a person. I think what Hollywood is doing right here is a direct assault at the states that have prevented same-sex marriage as much as they can. They've put their religious laws into effect. Basically, anti-gay laws is what they're at. And I think they're going after, like, North Carolina has some issues right now and some other states. I can't remember them off the top of my head. And by doing this, by putting it, hammering it home for those states, I think you have to go back a little bit for them so that they can help catch up. But I think it's ridiculous. This is 2016. Let's move forward.
I think it has less to do with those states' issues and more to do with this year in Hollywood. It became ridiculous the number of lesbian characters they killed.
Yes.
So many. I can think of probably half a dozen off the top of my head. And I know there's more than that because it, for like 2 weeks, several shows had tons. It was just, so I don't know. It could be completely unrelated. It could have been something they've wanted to do. I don't know. But that was a thing that happened this year.
Yeah. So I guess, sadly, it's not just all normalized and it's okay. Let's normalize it. But by announcing the character is going to be gay and nothing else on it, it's like, okay, might be taken to it too extreme.
Maybe I'm too cynical, but I'm like, hey, you got your headline out of it, I guess. I don't think it's something you need to announce and be like, hey, let's pat ourselves on the back. We made a character be gay. When the series of shows that they're doing, they've already made it not a big deal, character's sexual orientation. They've got people that are, gay, straight, whatever on there. It's not a big deal. I don't understand the whole motivation of, we're doing it again.
Well, and specifically because it's the CW, because they were, one of their shows killed a major lesbian character. I wonder if that's wise to kind of placate some of those fans, like, no, it's not, that's not what we do. Look, we've got more new gay characters. It'll be fine. Don't worry about it.
Until we kill them off again.
I understand why Brian Fuller made a point of bringing it up for Star Trek Discovery, because, yeah, CBS is the old white man channel. They had to show some diversity of some kind on there. And yes, Star Trek Discovery will be on CBS for one episode, so it counts.
Yeah. And what happened in Star Trek Beyond as well, but that has nothing to do with CBS. And totally fine. That was cool. That was a cool scene. If you haven't seen Star Trek Beyond, go see it.
It's interesting, the argument George Takei on that, which is for a completely different show, different topic. But George Takei's thoughts were very interesting to me as well.
Yeah. So if you have thoughts about this whole thing with CW, please get in touch with us. We would love to discuss it further on another podcast. So, Chris, we are, as you alluded to, we do have other podcasts on our network. We're part of the GunnaGeek.com network, and we have some other shows that we would like to talk about, right?
That's right. We always try to highlight at least one episode of an upcoming podcast or already published podcast on the network because, hey, that's what we're here for. We help each other promote our stuff because we like all of the stuff that everyone does. I wanted to let you guys know about episode 30 of Pop XCast that's coming up soon. It's the history of comics and pop culture. Team Pop X will break down the third segment in the series of the history of comics and pop culture, the dark ages of comics and McCarthyism, and how comics were scorned for content. That is upcoming soon on Pop X Cast, which you can find streaming live Sunday evenings at 9 p.m. over on geeks.live.
Thank you to everybody that's listened to download this podcast, whether it was on Spreaker, whether you've seen the replay on YouTube. Thank you very much. Thank you very much to our video editor, Chris.
Cheers.
And a special thank you to Mr. Neil, our regular co-host, who is not here tonight. He spent an incredible amount of time on the show notes. Thank you very much. And Michelle, thank you for your contributions as well. This was an important week to have all those show notes, and they were really kick-ass. They were really awesome, and we wouldn't have had the great show without them. So thank you guys very much.
And thank you to the live participants in the Fire Talk chat. Other listeners, they can join in live on Thursdays at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern on geeks.live. And wait, are we still holding on like to the
what?
And don't forget, after the show, we shut down the recorders and hang out with our live listeners where you can share your thoughts and geek out mm-hmm. with the crew on a wide variety of geek topics. Are we still doing that?
Yeah, that is capable of doing it on Fire Talk, but not in a four-person situation. So we won't be doing it tonight, but in our regular configuration with the three hosts, we would.
Oh, okay. Sorry. That's why
Right now we've got butts in all the seats.
Yeah. It's a new thing.
It is. And it's working. So that's cool.
Speaking of things that are working, so is the Gunna Geek Network and the Geeks.live landing page. We'd like to remind you that the next live show you can see on Geeks.live is Better Podcasting. That's going to be Friday evening at 6:30 p.m. Eastern time. So head on over to Geeks.live to watch for yourself.
Yeah, and don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. 5-star reviews on iTunes are always appreciated. You can like us on Facebook and YouTube and badger us on Twitter. So do all of those things. Do them all right now.
Right now. Pause the podcast you're listening to and do all of those things. Then come back and listen to us wrap things up. You won't be sorry.
Welcome back, and you can find all of our live content at the Gunna Geek Network at GunnaGeekNetwork.com, where you can check out our forums and other shows.
If you want to share your thoughts, head on over to our Facebook page, send in a tweet, or you can call us at 612-888-CAVE. That's 612-888-2283.
Well, guys, before we sign off, if our listeners just can't get quite enough of you, where can we find you all online? Let's start with USP. Where can folks find you online? What other stuff do you do?
You can find me tomorrow night on Geeks.live at Better Podcasting. It's a podcast for the hobby podcaster. If you're starting out or if you want to make your podcast a little bit better, that's what we're there for, is to make your hobby podcast as good as you can.
And Haley, you're up next. Where can folks find you online? What kind of stuff are you getting into?
Well, I do a few other podcasts. You can find me on Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D., where we talk about Marvel stuff. You can find me on Gallifrey Public Radio, where we talk about Doctor Who. You can find me on Crimson Comet, where we talk about The Flash. You can find me on Like a Girl, where we talk about Supergirl. And you can find me on More Than Chick Flicks, where we talk about movies.
That's all sorts of stuff. You're everywhere. And Michelle, where can we find you online?
I'm on Twitter at Michelle Ely. I float around the Gonna Geek verse. I'm here. I'm there. I just surprise you with my presence, and you're welcome.
She's like our go-to pinch hitter, to take a baseball analogy.
Michelle will be live tweeting the Arrow episodes this fall on the Starling Tribune Twitter account.
Well, thank you for doing that, Michelle. And to wrap things up, if you want to find me online, just go to GunnaGeekNetwork.com. I do a bunch of podcasts on there. Specifically, want to highlight the GunnaGeek.com show and Nerd Alert News. Nerd Alert News is my solo podcast that, for some reason, I finally got brave enough to do, where I tell you guys about cool news.
It's a good show.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. But that's been a great episode we've done tonight, guys. I think it's going to wrap us up for another week. Any last words before we sign off and open the fire talk up to our live listeners? At Stargate Pioneer.
Hashtag HG Wells in Warehouse 13.
At Michelle Ely.
Hashtag Sarah in a cowboy hat.
Ooh. You took mine.
That was going to be mine too. Well, next up, at Awesome Engineer Girl.
Hashtag Time Traveling Barroom Brawl.
And I am at the Chris Farrell, signing off with hashtag y'all stole my hashtags.
Hashtag no hashtag.
Oracle, I think we're done here.
This was the Starling Tribune. You can leave us feedback at gunnageek.com or check out our archive at starlingtribune.com. Visit gunnageek.com for more podcasts. Music by Kevin MacLeod can be found at incompetech.com. This podcast is not produced or maintained by the CW, Warner Brothers Television, CTV, or DC Comics. All characters, stories, and situations are the property of Time Warner. No infringement is intended. We will see you for the next episode of CW's Arrow.